First take, the only take, the one and only take. That's how we roll. Right? Welcome, everybody. This is BNB Weekly, episode 40, 40, 71.
Take two.
Take two.
So much for take one.
Welcome to BNB Weekly, episode 71. It is, I actually wrote it down, 17th of February. I'm actually officially on vacation, and that's why we are recording this today. No, just kidding. But we don't want to miss the weekly cycle, and plus the fact that I actually accidentally scheduled the setup with Luis before I realized that I'm on vacation. So, but that's
fine. That was my fault.
No, it's fine. It's fine. We're leaving it family to a small trip after slightly later today. So okay. But let's actually start. Welcome. So my name is Esa Ivonen. I'm a principal program manager from the OneDrive SharePoint Engineering. And with me as a co-host, before we go to our visitor and more detailed, is Valdek. Who are you?
Hi, everybody. My name is Valdek Masigas. I am head of product at Rancor. And today we have a guest, Luisa.
Yes.
Hi.
Who are you? Introduce yourself. Who are you? What is it that you do in the world of Microsoft 365?
Okay, so I'm Microsoft 365 consultant. I focus on the business side of the project. So I do a lot of employee engagement during the project, infrastructure regarding the business part. And I call myself a maker just because I fell in love with Power Automate. So perhaps it's a little path to the dark side of the force, but I really like it.
No. And it's actually one thing what we talked before we started recording is that you call yourself as a maker, not as a citizen developer. Why is that? Actually makes perfect sense. Can you elaborate that?
Citizen developer. So when I say, hey, I'm a citizen developer, I always see people like, what is she talking about? So I always need to explain that. And therefore, I say I'm a maker because we know makers from the DIY scene. And it's just like I don't have a formal education in doing a thing, but I'm just very curious to learn how it works. And for me, this maker drive is more about being curious and more being open than about knowing everything. And this is what a maker does.
To be fair, I would say that every single developer could call themselves as a maker as well, right? Because it's really around making stuff happen. Exactly. And one thing what you actually said about not being educated on anything. To be fair, I don't think anybody really is educated on what we do for a living as such, because I think you get a base set of kind of a knowledge and terms maybe from a school or from university or whatever. I never graduated from a university or anything, but still you get the basic set of terminology, and then it's all about making stuff happen, right? And learning as you move along.
Yeah.
But I guess that term applies to really everybody, because the moment you start automating things in Excel, like you want to simplify your daily works in Excel, in PowerPoint, or in Outlook, or you will create an Outlook rule, well, doesn't it already make you a maker? Because you use computers, you use software to simplify your everyday's work and to take out the mundane part of your day and to automate that so that you can have more time to spend on the things that do matter.
Absolutely. So I fully agree. So I consider that my job when consulting companies is taking away all that bullshit that prevents employees actually from doing their work and adding value to their company, but just keeps them busy for the sake of being busy. So busy and productive. And whenever employees seek for, hey, I need to simplify that. I just need to get my stuff done. I need to take away what prevents me from doing this. They are already makers.
There's one thing I wanted to ask you. I'm first here.
So many questions.
Yeah.
Let's make a list.
Well, now that we have you on the show, like, you became at some point famous for drawing people's talks.
Yeah.
Right? Is that how you always thought, and it was always a visual thing in your mind, and now you thought like, well, let me put it on paper visually for everybody else to share? Or is it something that you grew into over the course of years, and it's like, well, let me experiment with this way, trying to see if I will keep more of that in my mind or not? Or is it just like experiment?
Okay, funny story around that. So yes, I became kind of famous for doing sketch notes. But before I began this last year, but the year before at Collab Summit in Mainz, not in Wiesbaden, I never drew in my life. So I true. So I wanted to prepare myself for this conference because I thought, hey, 3 days full of fashion. After that, I will be brain dead. So I need to have a better technique to take notes. And I know that I'm a visual person. So because I easily recognize pictures, but not words. And if I type, I can type very fast, but it doesn't connect to my brain. So, and if I, and my handwriting was pretty bad. So after just like 2 days or so, if I don't have the right context, it's just a challenge to be able to recognize what I wrote actually. So, I set up a little visual vocabulary, just like 20 icons, and I improved my handwriting. And then I just sat down and I was able to translate that, what the speaker said on a piece of paper. So, and yeah, I worked on paper. Nowadays I work on OneNote, but I was just able to process the information faster in my mind. So if I find a good picture for something, this prevents me from writing too much stuff. So it's just faster. Right. Than just writing all the things down and
so it's basically your mind map, right? But it's not in a written, it's not in a text format like somebody some those people who love write mind maps. They some people do that, some people don't. But this is basically a mind map for a picture format.
Yeah, it is.
And also something what you said, which is really really important actually for every single presenter, every single person out there who's presenting or talking to people is to understand that there's different kind of ways how people remember things and how they visualize things and how they hear things, because and that's a kind of a pedagogical thing. If you ever study whatever teaching or whatever, then you are aware of these different methods, and in every single presentation you should balance them out. So sure, having a presentation where you only have big pictures and one word may be just efficient for some people. But.
Word.
Exactly.
Word.
You can even write pictures.
And it will be a presentation about Microsoft Word. Word.
Yeah, there we go.
So this is actually a word.
Yes, it's about Word.
Yeah, it is. So, so I fully agree. We need to balance that. And we need to make sure that anybody has access to that. And for some people, huge images, they work pretty nice. They just consume the information just by hearing what you're talking about. And some of them are more like, hey, I need my bullet points. And it's regardless what our PowerPoint teachers say us. So I need my 20 bullet points on just one slide.
Yep.
It's easier for me to consume that information. And some of them are just like, oh, I just close my eyes. And I will just enjoy the flow. And I will be just almost dreaming. I heard that as well. And some of them are like, hey, Louise, are you attending this session? And are you doing the sketch note? Because then I can attend another session. But
that is cool. That is cool. So you said that you haven't drawn only until 2 years back, 3 years back?
Yeah, 2 years, yeah.
Would you say that it's something for everybody, or do you need to have a talent in order to do it? Because I think I've seen you've inspired a few folks like Elio, Bill Ayers, who also tried that. Yeah. Some other folks probably as well. Do you know how they went about it?
Yeah. So in my opinion, if you always say, I don't have any talent to do this, this is a perfect self-excuse not to take responsibility for your own success. So it's not about talent. It's just about practicing things. And the more you do something, the better you get. And perhaps, just perhaps, talent will help you to get the best person in the world to do this. But I don't need to compete against Van Gogh or Monet or Picasso or something like that. It's just, I need some information on a piece of paper. And it needs to be good enough that others can understand this. And I don't need to be an artist. I call it functional drawing. So just to prevent myself from competing. And I think same applies to everything you want to learn. I try to learn JavaScript just because that's my story as well. it is just because. So I always say I'm the most untechnical person you can have working in IT. And perhaps I need to change my mind about that as well, just because I am evolving. But still, I wanted to learn something that is just far outside of my comfort zone. I don't need that for my job. I just wanted to have a different angle on the project I get involved in. And therefore, I do this. So the help to speak to developers more on eye level and to just understand without reading the comments what is the code right now about, this helps. And to understand that I need to learn how to write it as well, and I'm just at the beginning, but to be fair, I don't need talent to learn to code. I just need to go to
practice, repeat.
So, Quest, can you sing?
Sing.
Yeah.
Would you like to build a snowman?
Okay, actually, we all can
sing. No, you cannot. Okay, next.
No. We all can sing, but if we compare each other to Adele or whomever,
exactly.
The same applies to just drawing stuff. And yes, I taught several people in the community how to start with drawing. I did a session together with Elio at Modern Workplace Conference in Paris. So because it was like, hey, I would just choose developers. So because if I can make a developer just like start to draw, so
I can make anybody draw.
But we had pretty much fun on stage, and yeah, actually it was
cool.
And he said it improved his work as well. So just because if you're able to just draw, the
only on drawing, exactly. In general, improve the work, absolutely. But yeah, so sorry for jumping on that one, and just that's a great way of actually putting on recapping what you were saying, that if you judge yourself against the best in the world, then you easily give up immediately. It's like, well, why? Because I can never be Adele or whoever is the best singer in the world. But even improving little will make you broaden your mind and broaden your thinking on, and then making you feel better, and then you can actually learn new stuff. Absolutely.
And also, it's not about being the best, right? It's about enjoying the stuff that you do, right? And I mean, if that helps you, if you enjoy drawing, well, who gives that you will not be the next Manet or Picasso? It doesn't matter, right? Unless that's your goal. And I mean, even then, even these people who are the artists, like, they've done it for their whole life, right? So if you want to be at that level, you have to do it day in, day out too. As simple as that.
Plus, they were impostering as well.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, that's true. As well.
Exactly. Yes.
That's what you know. So even if you are the best in whatever, you doubt your own skills. So this is very common in our community. Everyone is impostering, or knows at least colleagues who are impostering, and they are all experts. And they are all on stage or writing damn good articles, and they're like, but I don't know if it's good enough, and I doubt my own skills. And
but that's really comes down also on being a maker, making things happen. Because as long as people push out stuff, we embrace and share. If we share more and push out stuff in the community and in the blog posts and everything else, everybody else will realize and they will learn from that. So it doesn't have to be the best in the world. And one of the things what people keep on telling is that, well, I didn't want to blog about that thing because Waldeck already had a blog about that. And I was like, no. Repeat. And there's always an alternative perspective. Of course you did have. You have talked about everything. But it doesn't mean that
is
anybody.
Not true.
No, just kidding. But it doesn't mean that everybody else could not be touching that topic. No, not at all. Of course not. Because there's always a different perspectives and learnings and updates and all of that stuff. So really, really important.
Updates. Seriously, there are updates?
Yes.
Never heard about that.
Yes. But things change. Surprise.
So when I try to learn a thing, I just plan a new blog post about it. So because then I really need to dig into that and see how it works. So I try to figure out how it works. I do my screenshots. I put it together in a blog post. I reread it. I do the thing again. And I notice, I need to record new screenshots just because
something's changed.
Yay!
So how often do you end up, like, so imagine you're doing something, you're stuck, you Google or Bing, how often do you end up on your own blog?
Oh, it happens. And when it happened at first, I was I was so freaking out. So it was just
that person is so smart. Oh, damn, it's me.
Exactly. I was like, wow. So when it happened, I was so proud of myself. I was like, hi. And it was just the first result. Yeah, it was like,
and you have no idea that you actually wrote about the topic in first place. You're like, wait, when did I...
So, and when I realized that, I started to write a learning diary.
Yeah.
So it's not only my blogs, but whatever I learn or whenever I have this light bulb moment, I just write it down in a OneNote notebook and I record all error messages. So whenever I get a new error message I never saw before, I just take a screenshot and put it in there just to compare them. And I have a huge collection of them.
No. There's no exceptions in our products or services.
Put them on your blog.
No.
Put them on your blog, right? No. Put them on your blog. Because seriously, like, you would be surprised how often people search
for
error messages. Like,
always
I have this error.
Exactly.
And that's probably the easiest blog. Like, you have this error. I fixed it like this.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean that it's a 100% match for every single scenario, but anyway.
Exactly.
One thing what I wanted to actually still touch, Louis, maybe going on the back on the drawings, because you said something when we were chatting, when we were setting this up, this call, which was actually really interesting, because it's also the downside of being measured on your visible achievements, so to say. You said, because I actually started the discussion, that it's great to have the drawing lady, which I don't know if that's didn't want to offend anybody with that statement.
Never call me a lady, okay?
You classify Louise like this, like, boom, you're a drawing lady, period. Like, I don't really care. Whatever you do in the world, you're a drawing lady.
That was the reaction. Yeah, and precisely.
Labels are good.
Yes. Well, in certain level, but no. But that was and it is a fair point, because everybody knows you. You came to be famous as the person who actually draw things. But then the labels actually stick so hard that we actually had a long exchange related on many other topics as well during that chat. And especially let's put it in email or in social media, where you don't see the face, where you don't see the person. It's really hard. Like, okay, are you labeling me? Or is this a joke? Is this, what are you, what?
Sarcasm does not translate on social.
Yeah, definitely not. No.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, so it was quite a challenge to change people's perspective on me, just because everybody knew. So this is the drawing girl. So she does it at conferences, and someone asked me, hey, so what are you doing for a living?
Drawing?
Do you know SharePoint?
What? What? What are you talking about?
So I was like, okay. So and then I just stepped back from drawing any conference session for a while, and just focused more on speaking at conferences and writing my blog posts. And I thought it would just be a good idea to find another niche for me, not because I don't like to draw, but because people's perception of me was always just like, she draws, so she recaps other ones' content. But she she has nothing to talk about, or nothing to draw about, or nothing to be about.
No opinion of your own.
That's a quite interesting soft discussion as well, because that comes down on the human ID and everything else, and biases, because we tend to label people by the first impression, and it's really hard to fix that first impression afterwards, because basically when somebody sets that your mind on, well, like, it's a certain person, it's like it sticks, and that's it. And so, which obviously I think it's a good thing, the human IT discussions, everything else happening, social media and conferences, those help some people not to do that or think before they label people, which is really good. Maybe it's also the maturity of the industry is heading to the right direction, maybe in general. So being more inclusive, being more diverse, being more, let's say, not labeling and bias immediately. So it's a human nature basically to categorize people, but still. Yeah. So.
Well, I think in a way you will never be able to avoid, because that's how our mind works. We need to label things, because otherwise our mind would be in overdrive mode, trying to figure out everything. Like, we don't spend to do that. We need to have a quick way to this is that, and then
we just group data.
Exactly. Okay. And then, like, if need be, you will need to reevaluate and, like, yes, sorry, I was wrong about you. I thought you did this. Well, you are a person. You are a whole self with more to it than just drawings, right?
Yeah.
But I think that the great thing that I see about community, and that's maybe that's something from the last year or so, but maybe that just me seeing it only now, is that I see that while in the past there was this big focus on tech, it was very much only about tech, about books, about blog posts. Well, recently, there's a big room for the human side of things, like people admitting to their shortcomings, being person, feeling like imposters, being afraid, having mental health issues even for some. Like, people are coming forward with all of that, and it's perfectly fine. And you see that that's being embraced, and people support each other, and there's a big group saying, like, yes, I have it too, I feel too. And then suddenly, like, that one person becomes a whole room of folks, like, we feel exactly the same. You are not the only one. And that is
super,
like, I think that there is really the most beautiful aspect, at least to me, of community. Like, we are, at the end of the day, we're people, and we're not like just robots spinning out code, printing drawings. There is a human side to it. And even though we are not friends, like, we don't really hang out every day, like, when you are at an event and you say, like, you admit to something in the open, like, people will, like, yes, I feel exactly the same, the same way. Like, there is more of us.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah, I fully agree. And it's so touching. And I never felt that accepted, like, in this community. All I am, and I don't need to hide anything. And I can just, like, be me, and it's appreciated and understood and accepted. And I just feel welcomed.
Well, this is absolutely. But like, well, like you said, it is a transition within the from a historical perspective, because I still, as a personal experience, just as an example in my case, I still think about the moment where a well-known MVP openly attacked against my English accent back in 2010. The blog post, my response to that blog post is still available on the internet, but the blog post where I was openly attacked based on my accent is gone. But it's one of those things where when you get one of those attacks as a human being, that sticks, because it's bullying. It's basically making people feel bad for them being by themselves. And it's like, what? Why? What was the perspective? Why do we? Why can't we just hang along and be alone? Which is weird. So and nowadays that doesn't happen anymore, because I think the whole community thinks much more inclusively. Thanks
more
everybody.
More open to other things.
More open to things. Yeah. We much more openly say that we have struggles, and then we deal with them together, or we help people to understand that if you have a struggle, it's fine. It's fine. Yeah. And then we'll help you.
But I guess it's also the thing that I think that is also thanks to the significant effort of some folks who spend a lot of time on the inclusiveness part of things. Like, in the past, specific group was all, let's say, Caucasian male between 30 and 50 for coming from specific background. Well, if you were in that, you would stick out and you would be, I don't know, finger pointed or whatever. And now that all communities grow and become more inclusive, there are more cultures, more genders, more backgrounds, more experiences.
Yep.
That enriches everybody, and that really helps welcome everybody to become part of it, as opposed to saying, well, I don't fit really in this ethnical group, so maybe I will not fit, so let me not try even.
Not even try. No, everybody is welcome. Every single person is welcome.
Everybody contributes something. Yes.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yes. Exactly that.
Good. We do have roughly 15 minutes, so we need to go to the articles. That's a good segue to go to the articles. Let's have a talk on the articles and then go back on the and close up for the discussion. So let me share my screen.
How to bake cakes with PHP for makers.
Oh, that's a different sorry. Nothing wrong with PHP. Now, good. Let's start from here. So this one from last week from Mark Cashman, related on Bubble and Crow, bonus episode of IntroZone. So this is basically, there was what was it called? The TV series with Funko Inc. Where is it? Mm-hmm. Shep and Swoop. There we go.
Yes.
Which
I did
was actually.
On that.
You did what? You did notes?
I did a sketch note. Note on that show. Actually.
And I think that was actually brilliant. I think it was a year ago when it was released, together to Laura and Susan, and then Ben actually visiting there. But basically, everything, it was really around the modern portals, and modern experiences, and modern SharePoint, and how the makeover to do. So, really cool article and a summary and all of the assets related on that one. this one more on the team side of the house, now that we are PMP Weekly, SharePoint Dev Weekly anymore.
Inclusive for actually, makers, for teams, for SharePoint, for all things like Microsoft 365.
But Adaptive Cars 1.2 are GA in Microsoft Teams, and that has a few different visibility toggles, so basically hovering over rich text blocks, inline text buttons, and there as well. So new features available in the Microsoft Teams for using the adaptive cards. This one was interesting from last week, quite a big event, actually. I don't know how many thousands of people were attending on this one, but there was the Microsoft 365 Developer Day, dual screen experiences. And this really relates on the, is it Duo? And what's the two dual screen thingies, what we
dual
are.
Dual screen experiences.
Duo, and then, but there's two devices, Surface Duo.
Neo, yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. But yeah, so basically, because we're introducing the dual screen experience model, and now there's a new development tooling available, there was a special day. And I think they had there was a really nice set of videos available. I think this is the summary videos, yeah, explaining for those who are interested on this side of the house. To be fair, in this podcast, in this video blog, we typically don't go to the Windows side of the house, and probably not in the future either, but it's obviously interesting. It's really interesting. And obviously, there is also the graph side of the house as well. So there is a separate video related on Microsoft Graph usage, because, hey, Microsoft Graph is the way to go. This one is from Louise Fries. Have you heard about her?
Some say she can do awesome drawings.
Yeah, some say that. And I can get pictures from my blog post as well.
There you go.
Yeah. This is absolutely brilliant. And where could I actually get this one? So that's, I need to order that from Lego. But this one really is a how to use Power Virtual Agent to simplify ID and user experience. So what is this all about? Luis, do you want to do a quick intro? It is a long blog post.
It is a very, very long blog post. So I literally documented everything. So in my opinion, it's all about user experience, and people like to request for teams, perhaps.
Yep.
In the most companies, this is restricted. So they turn group creation off, and then they have some kind of awkward provisioning process. And I was just able to set up Power Virtual Agent, so the new kid on the block, at the Power Platform, to provision a team and Power Automate using the Microsoft Graph. And this worked out really quite nice. And after that, I put that as an application into Teams again, so that users that are already familiar in Teams have their common interface where they can just request things. This was just an example how we could use chatbots to enhance user experience and just make them more satisfied with IT department, and just to narrow that traditional gap that is always between IT department and business departments.
Yeah. And this really demonstrates the power of the virtual agents as well, the way you don't need to write code. You can actually use the tooling which is available and just concentrate on the scenario as well. One thing what you seem to be missing on the discussion is that at least in the classic choke and the demo which we did back in ESBC at some point, it was, you didn't say please, and then when you write please, then it started the process. So a bot with an attitude, I think, was the story. So you needed to be polite to get stuff moving. No, just kidding. But obviously, really, really great story. And it is a no-code story, basically, except it's a no-code. Yeah. You're hitting APIs, and there's certain permissions.
Let me tell you a story about no-code. So when I started with Microsoft Flow, so then we called it Microsoft Flow, now we call it Power Automate. I considered myself just more like an end user, and I literally had no idea about code. And if you need to have some kind of JSON, it is code from an end user perspective.
Yes, absolutely.
And when JSON is code.
And expressions are code as well for end users. And even if I just need to name a variable, it's code for them. So I just untangled that from myself, and I just said, okay, JSON is just text in curly brackets and an expression. It's just like an Excel formula and everything is nice. I did that in blog post series about the Microsoft Graph in 30 days. And this is a very, very good one. So thanks again to Jeremy for that. But it's really hard for end users if you always repeatedly say this is no code, because it is code for them. And therefore, I love this hashtag, less code, more power. We always use this. And this really this is really good.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, great article, absolutely brilliant article from last week as well. So have a look on that one and really walks through step by step the process. I like the step by step blog post, because then you don't necessarily need to understand anything. And then you go in here, you go that through and you're like, hey, I was able to achieve that. Brilliant. And then you have baseline knowledge. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So rather than have something which is kind of telling you the steps, but not really. And then you hit do a prick wall and you can't figure it out.
The screenshot doesn't show everything. And then you're like,
I have
no idea what I need to do now.
Yes. Yes, indeed, indeed. Now, on other topics, Victor Villain this morning released a new preview version of Microsoft Teams Human Generator. So that's available, and obviously it's been available for a long time, but there's new updates coming on this one as well. We're kind of restarting this one. Somebody might have seen that there was a meetings last week related on this one with Victor and quite a few other people as well. So rebooting the system. And this one is also interesting from Microsoft SharePoint. Just a note, there's no article behind of this, but the new file experience is powered by the SharePoint. It's now 100% worldwide release. And so actually the file experience in Teams is much nicer, because you actually get the full file experience of SharePoint. So, and this again really shows the power of combining the best from both worlds. So the collaboration as in the Teams, and then the files and experiences from SharePoint and surfacing that in there. So really, really cool. Nice. Related on that one, I created a video last week, which was surprisingly popular, 6,680 views. So, yeah, in 4 days. But apparently there was a demand for this one. So this one is really about the fact that how would you combine the collaboration portal in the left navigation as the first entry, and then have the collaboration in the team. So really the best of both worlds, again, taking advantage of SharePoint modern portals for the corporate communication side of the house, so exposing the news, and then if you are the corporate communication person, you go to the SharePoint side, create the news, but consuming the news inside of Teams, and then having still the Teams experience, having really the everything in the Teams as the landing page, and like Waldeck, you were saying, what's missing from this Teams now?
Email,
yes. So,
but I mean, if you can pin SharePoint intranet, I can imagine you could also pin OWA in there.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's an interesting. Somebody should actually do a blog post on that one. Then you would have collaboration and then intranet and team. Emails in a one.
And then process. You have basically your OS for your work.
Yeah, exactly.
In place.
Exactly.
OS in one app.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Teams
exactly.
Will be the OS for your work then.
Which at some point Outlook was meant to be the one, but now Teams is growing to be one, which is really, really cool. Now, related on this video, I actually showed this video and created the video using the lookbook templates and all of that, because obviously you can really easily create sites. But one thing what I did actually here, which wasn't, I didn't go through exactly the full details and everything, because this scenario which I'm demonstrating in the video only works in the web client. If you are using the desktop, you will need to do some additional tricks. And as an example, João Ferreira actually went through those things. So you need to actually slightly modify the URLs and settings and all of that. Now, we are looking into creating additional step-by-step guidance on this one officially as well. So what are the Teams logo on ASPX and a few other attributes to actually use. And then we'll do a re-recording of the video, which will then show how to do the full setup. But it's good to see that there was a massive, massive demand for this one. So people are super interested on combining the collaboration and portals. So really cool.
Perfect.
And this one is actually from me as well. It's certainly not about me, but super important thing for us as well.
CLI.
Using Office 365, CLI to upgrade your solutions on SharePoint Framework 1.10, and then exposing your applications in Microsoft Teams, also including in the left menu as a personal application. Really kind of a walking through the steps of making those personal apps or Microsoft Teams solutions using SharePoint Framework. So one set of code, which will then work on both sides. So relatively long. Both videos are quite long, just 15 minutes as well, but they actually walk through the whole process. So not just showcase, hey, this is what you can do, but rather explaining how to make that thing happen. So this one is from Velin Gerkovic, Power Automate and SharePoint OData filter queries. And Luis actually kindly explained what's the whole point of doing this. Because, but the whole point being on the fact that if you use proper OData filter queries, basically getting only what relevant data, you don't need to do the filtering in the flow or in the Power Automate, because you can actually get just the relevant data from the rest or from the endpoint, whatever you're exposing. And that's what Velin is basically explaining here, those endpoints and how to actually modify them. So it simplifies then your flow process because you just target the relevant data.
Thinking of this, I think that would be a great addition. And if anybody from the Microsoft Power Automate team listens to us, it would be great to have the ability to test activity as opposed to the whole flow. Because
I would kill for that. Just like, hey, I only
right,
want to
if
test
if you type
this
a filter,
here.
Yeah, exactly. Like, test it. Does this work? I don't want to wait for the whole thing. No, just test it. Call this one.
Yeah. So what I do, just like as a tip, I test all my single actions just with the mobile button, and then just let this action follow. And if it works,
copy paste that
with a nice clipboard feature. So this is really neat for that. So we can do this, but I really like that if we had a test.
Absolutely. Now, that's a good input. Now, this one is from Alex. Office UI Fabric, we have group data list display tree like hierarchy. So basically walking through how do you do that kind of hierarchies and showing that and the learnings related on using that in code. Because coding is still an option. Not everything has to be no code.
Even though
in this week, we seem to concentrate on no code or low code scenarios. But hey, definitely there's
this is little code.
How do you define a little code?
Well,
is it the font size which impacts? No.
Yes. 1.4.
This one is Site Designs Deployment Made Easy from Al Eerdely. My pronunciation of English, see, my pronunciation is not good. Al Eerdely. Related on site designs and site scripts, and basically just having an additional functions on making things easier, which actually reminded me, we didn't talk about this one before we started recording, we're in progress of potentially starting our own, let's say, Microsoft 365 PowerShell script gallery. And that's basically building something together with MVPs, which where people can expose these kind of scripts. Ramalho, thank you, has been actually having a lot of scripts in his blog post as well, as an example. And getting these kind of things in a centralized gallery for people to easily access would probably help on the usage and exposure. So
to keep things here clear, do you want to do it only in PowerShell or also for things like Bash where people with CI/CD? Okay, so basically
CLI,
Microsoft 365 script gallery, if you like.
Correct. And the first step would be kind of a relatively simple setup. So just have a GitHub behind of the scenes and people can submit stuff there and then surface the scripts. And then the second phase or third phase will get things more, let's say, polished and everything. But already as such, getting a centralized location where people can submit their scripts and then get them easily exposed using polished UI.
Yeah.
Ta-da.
And have some
rather
text,
than,
description, meta, so that
exactly
you can
see,
find the
scripts. Yes, exactly. And getting also these people who are contributing then the easy location to actually get visibility because people do awesome stuff, but nobody knows about them. So we need to help that. Anyway, working on it. We should have something quite
shouldn't
soon.
Shouldn't take long.
Shouldn't take long, yes. Also, our Italian friend, which keeps on releasing videos in every single week, he's not very doing good. This one. So really good video related on using PMP.js. It's a running joke that he's an angry Italian. Using PMP.js with SharePoint Framework, episode one. I know that he is planning to do multiple, and this is really, really good. So PMP.js definitely is the easiest way to get data from SharePoint REST endpoints. So it's a really easy way of implementing stuff. Good, and then the last one from SP blog or from Sergey. SharePoint Development Day 2019 story based on SharePoint Stack Exchange analysis with Power BI. So he's basically analyzing the Stack Exchange data using Power BI, which is actually pretty cool. There's a lot of additional data and details, how people are answering things. To be honest, personally, I'm not that often in Stack Exchange because just 24/7, 24 hours in a day, which it's a limiting factor. But it's actually interesting to see the trends and all of that based on exposed API by the Stack Exchange. Infopath questions. Oh, interesting, interesting. Good that it's going down. Move away from
Infopath. They were going down. Now they're going up again.
I think hopefully it's going up. Because
is it gone yet? Is it gone yet? Exactly. When is it gone?
When will it be gone?
Yeah, exactly.
Good. That's it for the article. So let me close the sharing and let's do final things for this week. So final words. Any final words? Not final words. Final words this week.
Luis, any plans?
Any plans? What are you planning to do this week?
A customer workshop. So we do collaboration contracts. So we enable teams how they want to work together. What are the expectations? What do we use for what? And just committing on a certain work style. We just put that down in a document. And we pin this in the team itself because I'm pretty sure they will use our teams, but we have an open discussion about that. So they commit to their working behavior. I will kind of facilitate this.
Cool. Is it on face to face or is it online?
No, it's face to face.
Yeah, so it's so much easier that kind of discussion. Yeah,
so right now I'm at my customer. So okay. They're pretty.
So they're basically we are now 3 minutes off our schedule. So they're waiting already. That Luis, come on.
No. They are fine with that. Okay. they have homework to do.
Cool. What about you, Walek? CLI things continue. That's going every single week. There's a new version, almost.
Yes. Yeah. So almost. I think we have.
It was a really great feature.
It's like we really try to stick to the cadence that we have. That we ship a version every week, and then once a month we have a minor update, which is major release, but minor update. We try not to break folks, and we stick like once a year we have a major version where we say, you know what, we do a cleanup of everything that we would accumulate over the period of time. We're going to clean things up, which could mean that some of the things you have built in the past might break because we change the names of things. So this is something that we want to try to do not more often than once a year because it imposes rework on everybody who is in CLI, so we want to keep that in check. So we're working currently, and I think that's what you mentioned, we're working on a command that helps you to check whether your environment has everything that you need in order for you to be able to build things on SPFX. Because time over time, there are frequent questions like, I am now on 1.10. Which version of Node do I need? What do I need NPM this or that? Do I need EO? Do I need Gulp? Do I need specific version? So we want to basically encapsulate all of that into a command that you can run, like 0365 SPFX, check. And then it will basically run throughout everything you have. It's like, okay, you have Node, you don't have this one, you don't have this one, you have this one, you have that one. Yep. Basically to give you a really quick checkup, are you good? And then especially if you go version back and forth because you are a consultant, how often it is that you are now on 1.10 doing something else, but you have to go back in time to 1.6, and then you try to build and it breaks. Like, oh yeah, for that, you have to have Node version 8 as opposed to Node version 10. Yeah. Things like that. So basically help you to fix all of that, have a really easy way to check, am I on par for this version of SPFX?
Super valuable. That's really, really, really valuable.
It only took us 2 years to realize that might be helpful, but
yeah, that's good. Last a bit of time. We'll learn.
Listen to your customers.
Exactly. Listen to your customers. There we go. That's
we do. We do. Well,
yeah, I know.
And it's a cool thing. Right. I switched jobs at Rancor a while back, where from being a dev, I became PM and then responsible for all our offerings, and actually doing CLI is actually that. I'm being a PM, where a big part, yes, we can build things, but for a big part is also market research, listening to users, listening to customers, like what are problems people have, doing research, trying to prioritize things back. So this it's a really great proving ground, and actually a common ground for the things that I do in my work and also things that I do in community work. It's more than dev. It's just that additional aspect that makes it really fun.
Yeah.
So that is the community part of me. The work part of me, we're shipping a preview of product that we've been working on for the last few months to a selected group of customers. So that's going live tomorrow. So today are the final checks before we take off. So it's also
remember the documentation. Got documentation. Getting started. Guidance. Super important.
So we will be onboarding.
Please do proper documentation.
Well, so the good thing is that we will be onboarding everybody through a call. We have a limited group of folks that we can onboard one-on-one. So it's not that key that we have really a lot of extensive docs.
So
docs will come eventually, but first is like one-on-one calls, explaining the value, reiterating that, onboarding everybody, explaining them, ensuring that they get what we offer, how it works, and then leaving them be for a while to see them basically turn the knobs and tell us what makes sense, what doesn't make sense, and basically get out of the bubble in which we've been for a few months, hit the reality.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. And on my time, on my side, I'm going to stay with family a few days. So this is already an extra time, which I shouldn't be doing.
You'll be off the grid. Yeah, we carve out 8 minutes
we'll
of
see.
Your time.
Yeah, we'll see how much off the grid I can be. But there are certain things which we need to get anyway moving, and a few community calls. There's an MVP call coming on Wednesday, and there's a public call on Thursday. But it is what it is. But anyway, spending time with the kid and family in general. So really good.
Excellent. Very good.
That's an important part of our life as well, and everybody should
remember. It
is. Absolutely. But I think that's it for this one. So thank you, Luis, for a great discussion between different locations. So if we're again, this is super scripted. So we just go on the.
It was all our intention. It was all our intention. Like I have it here on a script.
So we just plan chaos.
Okay. Yes, exactly. Yes. And then you move forward from there. So that's
we scripted reality. It in a way so that it looks non-scripted. Ha! Huh? Ah, makes you think.
Clever.
It's just like makeup. If you don't see it, it's perfect.
Yes.
There we go. Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway.
Takeaway of the week. PNP Weekly is like makeup. If you don't see it, it's made perfectly.
Okay. That's a great location to start. So thank you for Luis for coming, and thank you Waldeck again. And we'll be back with the new SharePoint Weekly in a week.
PNP Weekly
in a week. Bye bye.
Thanks everybody. Bye.
Bye.